Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
Thanks to Jenny Green and well done to Carol Mullen. It's Monday the 27th of April and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we react as GAA President says the championship could move to 2021.
I know there's a lot of speculation that professional sports like rugby and soccer may come back here in Ireland or maybe overseas. But like that's probably in the sense that they'll cocoon their players. But our amateur athletes, they go back to their families, they go back to their workplace. And we can't put any of those people or those people they come in contact at risk.
Stephanie Roach joins us as manager Vera Powell hopes for a longer stay with the girls in green.
When that game comes, the stadium will be packed because everybody wants to support us in these difficult times. And I truly have no doubt that the Irish people will come out and support us and will maybe even be more fanatic to be there for us.
Plus, we've Gerry Thornley on how the World Rugby Leadership Race is heating up.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, Ruby, how are we doing?
Absolutely fantastic. Start of another week. Here we are. We're still going well. I mean, we don't have any sport, but there's plenty to talk about. And I'm very excited about the week ahead because we have so many great guests coming our way starting today.
You are full gear for it, aren't you?
I'm absolutely loving it.
I think this is the first little problem we've had. I can see Ruby, but I can't hear him, which is unfortunate.
I don't know, is that a problem?
I'm in now, don't it?
Oh, he's
there
back.
He goes.
Someone turned it up.
Ah, brilliant stuff.
Someone turned up the radio.
They turned it on and turned it off, and it's perfect now.
Ruby, Marie is in flying form. How are you?
I'm in good old form, Donica. There was plenty written and plenty said over the weekend about sport, but still nothing happening. But at least it looks like some of the major soccer leagues are trying to. The Bundesliga have set a date of May the 9th, the Serie A June 2nd. Spain are even trying, aiming for the end of May or early June. So at least there's dates and there's progress being made anyway.
It feels like that it's kind of inching closer to something happening. The leagues with the big money are able to put things in place because they can get the testing, they can get their players cocooned, they can get whatever they need. But the Bundesliga have gone quite far and they've a leaked document outlined some of the potential plans that they have in place and the way that they want players to act. Like showers have to be at home, preferably. They need to wash their own kit and their boots. They're going to have to be doing all their own jobs now. Special arrangements made for travelling. They're going to be checking temperatures. They're going to be disinfecting everything that they can see. They can't whisper. They can't line up with other teams. I think it's going to add a whole other dimension to sport.
I love the one where they weren't allowed to use public transport. Could you really see Robert Lewandowski queuing up for the 46A across Germany, could you?
Well, the only thing now is that if they do get on public transport, there won't be many people on it. There'll be no one asking them for selfies, so it'll be a lot more of a pleasant experience for them.
I love that the Premier League have given it a name, Project Restart. Like, this is 007 stuff, isn't it? So Arsenal, Brighton and West Ham are all back, so Marie, it could be soon that Liverpool get back and at it.
Yeah, like there seems to be will there. It's difficult though because I know like there's a lot of flip-flopping with public opinion and, you know, when we get there our daily information about the number of people who have the virus or who die, then the priority becomes straight away looking after people. But then you kind of take a step back and when you're in your own little bubble and you start to want to look forward to things again. So it is kind of like a seesaw trying to figure out what's the right way to feel about it and pushing sport, like it sometimes doesn't feel right, but at the same time, it does lift public mood.
I know, Maria, probably doesn't feel right at times, but somewhere along the way, someone's going to have to show the road out of this and lead society forward. And I think sport is a huge role to play in that, as in how to show people to get back to a working life. Not nowhere near a normal life, not what it was, but I think people need to be creative. Sports teams, associations, whatever it is. But people are looking for leadership and are looking for a way to move forward as well.
you mentioned there was a lot of good things written over the weekend, and one of them was by John Green in the Sunday Independent, and he quoted Bernard O'Byrne from Basketball Ireland. And what he said was that sports are going to have to reinvent and reimagine, and like, that's it really. You know, we're not going to look back at March and get what we had then. We're going to get something different. So it's about trying to make it work for people, that it's a positive thing, and it's something that's accepted by the public.
So FIFA are already looking at ways, aren't they, Marie? There's chats of five subs now being used, and what I liked is they've actually made it, you're allowed to use three slots to make the substitution, so not tearing the arse out of it, dragging the game on by making slubs. You've got time at half time to do it, but they're kind of saying if players are coming back, there should be an opportunity to use more of your squad. So at least they're fairly forward thinking.
Yeah, putting plans in place. And we might be a little bit clearer tomorrow about the League of Ireland. They have until the close of business today to submit their financial feasibility studies to the FAI. So that means that they were asked to price up like how much they would be hit by playing behind closed doors. It was announced today that UEFA is giving all of the their associations some money. So the FAI are going to get 4.3 million and they want it to be used to rebuild the football community. So that might be a way of facilitating behind closed doors football. But we know that a lot of clubs feel that it's not the way to go. Some do feel like it is the way to go. So tomorrow's meeting, which will be on in the afternoon, should be interesting. And we might get a clearer picture of where the League of Ireland will be, because obviously they wouldn't be anywhere near financially able to operate the way the other big leagues in Europe would be.
No, they wouldn't. But when you look at the League of Ireland compared to, at the very top of the League of Ireland, compared to all the other completely amateur soccer clubs around the country, to mobilise the League of Ireland, there's only X amount of teams in it. That means only X amount of players. To mobilise that first is the smallest amount of people. So I could see why the League of Ireland has to lead the way for all other soccer in Ireland. And I think the same with football and hurling. And I just think the top has to lead the way for everyone coming underneath them.
Yeah, and what's happening in the Bundesliga is a reflection of what's happening in the country. I was reading Volkswagen has restarted Europe's largest car factory. So if people are going back to work, then it seems right. Like, Ruby, you're good for pointing it out. It is an industry. Sport is an industry. You know, the motor industry is back in Germany. So why shouldn't the football industry be back?
It does bring us on nicely to the GAA, which is not an industry, really. They are amateur players, and the discourse surrounding what they should do has been quite different to what professional athletes and sports people should do. And we will be getting into that with John Heslin very shortly. And John Horan, the president of the GAA, spoke today, and we will hear his clip a little bit later as well. But something that that struck me yesterday was Peter Lee of the Mayo Ladies Football squad. He's the manager of them, and he's stopped tracking them, which I thought was interesting. He's just letting them off to their own devices. If they want to run, they can run. If they want to do a session, they can do it. But he's no longer monitoring them because he just feels that it's not really fair. They're in their fifth week where competition has stopped. Like, how long do they keep going and pushing them to work when they don't have football at the moment?
That's a debate now. Yeah, myself and Donica have had several times. I just wonder, Marie, do people over anticipate how unfit they will get? You won't get that unfit in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks if you're just minimally ticking along. You're not losing the huge amount of fitness people assume you're losing. So they should all be reined back with the build-up they're going to have to get into anyway to create freshness and encourage them to be looking forward to it rather than wearing them out with no end goal. I think training, when you've nothing to aim at, the training should be scaled right down anyway.
I would find that hard now if I was a player that had gone through 6 weeks of intense training, that they kind of go, all right, best of luck for the next little while. I'd like to think, Marie, that Peter, that there's some bit in place there for players to get advice and help if they need to keep going or find a way to keep training. I agree with it. The emphasis should be put on the player to show their want to train, but sometimes players need more support.
You see, you'd struggle with it, but surely you will have remembered what you did in those 6 weeks, Donica, and you could replicate some of the running, some of the the cardiovascular exercises. It's only to keep yourself ticking over. You're going to go back into training to be peaked back up for the match anyway. It's only to keep yourself ticking over. I can't see why people can't do it themselves.
I think those days are gone, Ruby, because I think the people that are lazy are weeded out in sport nowadays anyway, so there's no one in there. So I think the big problem is self-harm, and people will train maybe over the top or do extra parts on top of it, maybe do, you know, and actually hurt themselves by trying to overreach. Everyone's doing 10 reps on this session, I'm going to do 13 or 14, you know, and I think that's where players need to be protected. I think the way sport has gone, the fella that, you know, hangs around the back or drags his arse, they get spun out the back anyway.
But surely you still have to be... The lazy fellas are after getting weeded out, but the guy who's not lazy then, he's obviously is harnessed when he's been trained week in, week out. But surely they understand the requirements of minding yourself as well.
Yeah, I think they do. Look, it's all, you're right, it's all about the education and knowing your body, Ruby. And it took me an awful lot of time, maybe you were the same, but to know what actually works for me. And I remember getting to the point with some power weights that I was there. That's a waste of my time doing that. My technique isn't going good enough at it, and I won't develop any power from doing it. So I'm just actually, I'm going to concentrate in strength exercises. And it's just knowledge to know what works for you. Is really important, but that takes a bit of time.
You have to give Peter Lee a bit of credit. He says that they will know 2 weeks in advance if it's going to be lifted. We'll have a fair idea what way the curve is going and what's happening with social distancing. Then we'll get back training. We can't stop. We can't have them training non-stop with no end game.
I agree with Peter Lee. Yeah. I think he's doing the right thing.
Yeah. I agree. I would just love if there's... I'd hate if it just falls off the cliff for them. You know, if people want to continue, they need to... But you're right, Marie. The main thing is they're amateurs as well, so they need to be looked after even more.
Yeah, especially if some of them are on the front line. We need those people at the best, lads.
Not wrong.
So there was a little bit of chat about the rugby today as well, Dunica, because Stuart Lancaster was up for media duties and he's a bit like, what could he say? He's like everybody. He doesn't really know what's going to happen. He's just trying to keep everybody ticking along, but they are professional, so it's a different scenario. He spoke to Michael Corcoran today.
The only thing I can say from the outside looking in, and I'm not involved obviously directly with how this is all going to play out, is that there's going to be an element of compromise from everyone, I think. You know, I understand the position of international rugby and club rugby, you know, and everyone wants to get their game going again, whether it's, let's say, you know, for financial reasons, for operational reasons, for rugby reasons. But whatever path they choose to navigate, I think the players have to be at the centre of the decision making. I think the danger is that everyone tries to, you know, if everyone can get back to playing the sport again, everyone tries to put everything into a very small window, or it gets crammed into a very small window that extends for a whole 12-month period. And I think there has to be common sense applied as well. And I think the only way they're going to resolve the situation is by everyone prepared to give a little bit of ground in order to move the game forward. But it is also a potential chance to recalibrate what the global game looks like anyway, in my opinion. And I think it probably needs to do it now is the best chance to do it.
Stuart Lancaster there, a Leinster rugby coach. Dunica, do you think that it's a good opportunity for them to recalibrate the rugby calendar, or is it just too complex to even get into it and everyone should just focus on getting back playing?
No, it's not. This is a great opportunity. It really is. For years, Marie, what would happen is we would play the Southern Hemisphere in the autumn or travel at the end of our season. We'd either be knackered or we wouldn't have played international rugby. And it's just whatever happened... It just didn't make for a kind of meaningful games in any of these matches. So I think there's a real opportunity here. And the main thing is to include more countries, to get the Japans, the Americans, you know, other teams around Europe, the Romania, to like get them more involved and kind of start growing out rugby.
More meaningful. It's easy to know you weren't playing when Ireland beat the All Blacks in that November match, or they would have been meaningful.
Did I say meaningful?
They didn't. They weren't meaningful, as what you said.
All right.
Because of when they were played. Yep. So when they came up here in November, it just wasn't meaningful. Is that what you're saying?
I'll be honest, Ruby. If you compare that to a Six Nations game, it was massive compared to it. And the thing was, you weren't international hardened and they were coming off the back of playing Tri-Nations or championships, so it was an advantage to them. But there's a lot going on off the pitch in terms of the global calendar and even the leadership race with World Rugby. We've Gerry Thornley coming up later on, so we'd be interested in your comments, 51552, if you'd like to express what you think should happen with the rugby calendar. Ruby, I'd leave you in charge of it. You're good with dates.
It's not so much that, but even here, people talking about getting rugby back on. Rugby is not really a game for the middle of the summer on rock hard ground.
Yeah, I'd hate that.
Well, me too, the thoughts of it. So that's why it's played the way it is in the Southern Hemisphere and played the way it is in the Northern Hemisphere, because it's basically a winter game. So you're trying to knock the two together, but the summers and winters don't line up.
But someone would love it. Some people would love that type of hard ground, fast game, all skill-based.
You know, like who? Who'd love that?
Backs. Those backs, Marie.
It's like you're talking about a different species there.
Yeah, those, you know, 9 to 15, there's these players, no one really likes them, but they actually like running on hard ground. You don't get it?
Oh, let's forget about them.
They do till they get tackled and creased by, oh, no, stop. You're bounced off the rock hard ground, and then 4G pitches burning the knee off you.
Just on the rugby, honestly, one guy that will be happy is Joe Moyler. 12-week ban for grabbing Alwyn Jones in a place he shouldn't have grabbed him. But he hasn't missed one game, and he'll be back and ready to play if rugby is back by the 7th of June.
So that's the look of the draw.
Perfect timing for him.
Good for him. Okay, lads, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with John Heslin and we'll hear those comments from the GAA president, John Horn.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I have to do a quick shout out. Right. My little boy Timmy is 8 today, and if I don't say happy birthday, I'll be in big trouble. So happy birthday, Timmy.
Well, on Timmy, we saw Timmy's cake on your Twitter. Oh my goodness. Well, it looked incredible.
Yeah, Liverpool players, it was a nice one. I ate most of it, but look, that's probably why I'm in such good form. A weekend full of cake.
What was the cake?
You bake it yourself, Marie, yeah?
No. I got a cake delivery. Very handy. Now, guys.
It looked class. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Right, will we move on? We heard John Horan today said that the GAA Championship could run into 2021, and he was speaking on Sean O'Rourke this morning, and he was very, very forceful in saying that they are not really yet considering allowing intercounty players to return to training. They want to see what the social distancing plans are going to be. There was a lot of conversation over the weekend that perhaps they were considering trying to put some sort of a plan in place, but it's premature to even suggest that yet. Let's hear from him.
The one thing about the playing of games is they're a contact sport, and like when social distancing of 2 metres is a high priority at the moment, I can't see contact sport coming on board in the short term. The other feature in this is we're an amateur sport, and I know there's a lot of speculation that professional sports like rugby and soccer may come back here in Ireland or maybe overseas, but like that's probably in the sense that they'll cocoon their players. But our amateur athletes, they go back to their families, they go back to their workplace, and we can't put any of those people or those people they come in contact at risk but just for the sake of playing games. So we won't be making any rush decision on this. We've always taken our guidance from the health authorities, and we'll continue to do that. And until they declare that contact sport is safe, we won't be playing games. And if and when we do return, the club scene will be our priority, because like 98% of our activity happens at club level. And club level includes all our intercounty players. So as we're looking at it at the moment, our return initially will be back to club activity before we actually engage in the intercounty playing.
And I suppose one of the reasons for that might be that you don't have to have, some clubs, club matches will attract big crowds, obviously, but a lot of club matches can take place and you won't have anything like 5,000 people in attendance.
Yeah, well, you know, that isn't the biggest problem, because like we have such large stadiums that we could control and keep, you know, crowds of 5,000 apart. Like 5,000 would be completely lost in big stadia like Croke Park and Thurles and that sort of a thing. But it's just the greater activity and the greater benefit to community would be to have actual club activity taking place first. Look, the intercounty game is very important to us, but we've got to try and strike a correct balance in this. And obviously, if we do get back in 2020, it will be shortened seasons for both club and county activity.
So in the meantime, John, what is your advice to players and managers?
Well, I think in the short term, you know, I would be saying to them is to, you know, keep in touch with their players and keep their players active. there will be a timeline of return. Like, it's not going to be somebody's going to hit a switch and say there's matches on next week. So there will be a clear timeline in which people will get the opportunity, I feel, to go back and get a training program in place before they actually start playing games. The length of that training program may be shortened in comparison to normal training programs, but look, everybody's going to be singing off the same hymn sheet and working off the same hymn sheet. So in that context, look, we'll give clear direction to people when we see them coming back and when we see the games actually taking place. And we're fully aware, we're not going to put players back out playing games at a full intense level without getting some training under their belts. People talk about gatherings of crowds and all of this, but the key thing is a contact sport. When will the health authorities declare contact sport is safe? And until then, we really cannot make a decision about returning to play. And, you know, that's the key question in it all. When will contact sport be safe?
Could you see the 2020 either club or inter-county championships running over into 2021?
If that's a possibility, yeah, we would be open to that, and we would just adjust the 2021 season. Yeah, most definitely. I think there's a hunger and an appetite out there among both players and spectators to see games being played. So at the moment, like, you know, we did issue a statement in July. I think we can push that back further now again. But, like, you know, it's the movement of the actual control of the virus is the key issue to it all. And, you know, games are games, but we're not, as I say all along, we're not going to put anybody at risk.
Now, that was GAA President John Horing speaking earlier on Sean O'Rourke, and I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by John Heslin, Westmeath Intercounty footballer. John, there was a lot in those comments from John Horing there. Just for you, like, all we know now really is that you're in limbo for another while. What's it like for you guys?
Good evening, everyone, and a big shout out to Timmy as well. Happy birthday to Timmy. No, I think for the large part, look, I think John Horne spoke very well and he did the best he could. I think globally we're in an unknown situation, so I don't see how John Horne or anyone within the GAA or any other sporting community could give a date as to when we would return to play or participate in any sport, particularly a team game, you know. My one concern would be this effect, letting this year affect next year's games as well. You know, I wouldn't be necessarily a fan of that.
Why so, John?
Well, sure, look, we have a kind of arguably a defined period of play every year. And, you know, if they let the championship run on this year, then we're going to decide to play whenever possible. And then your preparations are then affected for next year. You know, I think that if we return to play this year, which I see it as highly unlikely, given the science behind it all, how I don't see how we could come together without, you know, a vaccine or certain amount of herd immunity, as they mentioned, or the virus magically disappears. But I just wouldn't like it to affect next year as well. Like, you know, we go back training, be it December or whenever, November, December for certain teams, and then you're preparing for next year. So they'd have to alter next year's calendar as well, you know.
I'd agree with you there, John. Somewhere along the way, there'll have to be a cut-off as to what can be saved and what can't, and you can't just indefinitely keep pushing things on because the backup will become way too much. I found it interesting for John Horan to say that when they do start back, it will be the club scene for the greater benefit of community. That means mobilising 98% of the GAA. Would it not be simpler to mobilise the 2% to play county football first to find a way back for the GAA?
Yeah, look, I think that there's arguments for and against both of those points. I don't know the exact number of people that are required to run the inter-county game, but, you know, there's a lot of people that are involved in training for one particular team. Someone's played that by, or 32 teams or whatever it may be. There's a lot of people involved regardless. Of course, with your clubs, there's many, many more clubs across the country and more people engaged, but there's a balance between, you know, getting the community active, mental health, and then exposure to a virus that is a global pandemic. So I think that's... Look, John Horan has erred on the side of caution there. I think that, you know, I've listened to it a couple of times just to try and get every key message that was in it. I think he spoke very well and handled it quite well. Whether it's the club or inter-county that goes back first, I think that by the time it's all well and safe to do so, I think that that will have to be reviewed, to be honest. I don't know. Like, they can't make a decision on anything yet. They just don't know. It's that uncertainty that is causing that, you know.
John, would you be comfortable as an amateur player, somebody who has a job and can't be cocooned, to get back playing inter-county football if there's no vaccine?
Yeah, I suppose just on the last point as well, the other thing about it is that you can't really be picked for your inter-county team unless you're performing at club level. So there's been that much of a break that all being said, you kind of have to perform for your club, don't you, before you're picked for your county. So I don't know, it's hard to call on that one. But yeah, in terms of going out and being exposed, like, you know, it's a tough one because there are so many people affected by it throughout the country, you know, and it's, you know, and you know, I apologise to all those who have suffered losses. You know, it's a tough time for people, yet we're talking about an amateur game. You know, it's a very tricky situation to be in, you know. And no, it's not something that you want to be exposed to. I think that as a society, we're going to change quite a bit. You know, I'm in one of the least vulnerable categories, yet when I'm in the supermarket and someone's leaning close to me or engaging in that 2 meter zone, you're kind of like, back off a bit, you know. And that's, I think a lot of people are going to be like that. But then saying that, there are going to be a cohort of the community that aren't like that. And it might cause a little bit of a split, you know, if some lads want to go back and train and some lads don't feel comfortable. Who's right and who's wrong in that situation, you know?
I don't think anyone's going to know who's right and who's wrong. But that's going to be a dilemma across so many sectors. John, you're a beef farmer as well. So when the mart's open, when business is involved, what way are you going to play that one?
Yeah, so luckily enough, my work hasn't been, you know, affected. I'm also working with MSD Animal Health, and we work in the area of vaccines and antibiotics for cattle, and I'm sheep and pets, the whole lot, you know. I am marketing and that side of things, so I'm actually quite involved in, you know, informing farmers about the importance of vaccinating and protecting their herd against diseases such as IBR and BVD and so on, you know. And you know, in terms of the farming at home, then like breeding season is starting. I have to get the vet in, actually, the annual TB test tomorrow. So the vet come in tomorrow, and I have to try and keep my social distancing from the vet while bringing the cattle in for him to go through the test. And all being said and done, I have to try and keep my distance from my father, who I'm not living with. And I'm being exposed. My partner is a nurse, and she's working on the front line and dealing with COVID cases. And I have to try and work all of that in together. So that's just one example. And you multiply that out across the community, be it the GAA or the wider community, it's so hard to nip it in the bud and keep control of it. We've done a fantastic job to date, but I think that if we ease up too early, it could, you know, we could see a resurgence, which is the worry, you know.
You're speaking of there, how are you going to keep your distance from all those people tomorrow? Your father, the vet, trying to vaccinate cattle. But the reality is you have to, and the reality is somewhere along the way, one of those bullocks is going to be a bit fractious and you're going to get close to them. But that's the reality of life, that you, in order to live, you're going to have to get close to someone.
Yeah, well, look, once it's one of the bulls, the actual bovines that are running mad around the place and not me, I'll be happy enough. you know, once it's not one of us, we have to try and control. But look, there's been plenty of advice out there. A staunch Kerry supporter and vet, Doreen Carden, has been on to me quite regularly, and I'm starting to realise that she's on to me to find out, is the GAA Championship going on? She doesn't care how I'm doing at all. I thought she was interested in me, but she was interested in the GAA Championship, so she's been looking for information the whole time. But the likes of her, Doreen, it works for Munster Bovine, their genetic company, and they're giving regular advice on what to do when people are entering your farm. So there are plenty of measures in place. So tomorrow we will be operating, you know, in the correct manner to ensure that you're not coming in contact with the vet, etc. There'll be gloves, PPE, all the rest, and we'll be keeping our distance. And hopefully the cattle are quiet enough that they won't cause too much issues. But look, it's a very serious matter, as we well know. I think everybody wants to see the GAA return this summer, of course, but it is quite difficult, you know. And as GAA players, you're trying to keep training and keep fit. And you know, I'm lucky to be not too far from Marley Park here, so I'm regularly training there. But I was actually kicked out of a local school here last week, a school that we will say that's related to Josh van der Fleer. I'm right beside it, and there's goals there. So I was like, going over there, kicking points and, you know, doing my runs. And I tried to convince the security guard that it was Josh van der Fleer, but he wasn't believing that at all.
You needed a scrum cap for that.
Another few kilos, I reckon.
Exactly. He wouldn't be running from bulls. But just on it, like, there's no one better place to chat about rural Ireland. And, like, over the last while with Marie and everything, we've seen what the GAA have been doing with the Do It For Dan, the Cork Hurlers helping out Marymount. The spirit within the GAA at the moment is off the charts in terms of even using Parky Queeve in Cork to help, you know, people test, you know. You might give us some examples that you're seeing, John.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic. And it's at times like that and times of need that you're really proud to be a member of the GAA community. And look, Ireland as a whole, you know, it's not just the GAA community. Everyone kind of rolls in. But obviously I'm a member of the GAA, so I'll be biased in that sense. But we actually did a Do It For Dan campaign yesterday with St. Lomond's, Mullingar, my club. And the Westmeath GAA team actually got in behind us as well with a number of lads doing the run. So we set a target of 1,000 kilometres to achieve yesterday. And raise some funds for Do It For Dan. We actually ran over 1,800 kilometres and walked 1,800 kilometres. There was people from every age group of the club involved, and, you know, the Westmeath team as well, and just donations left, right and centre. And, you know, I have to congratulate and say fair play to everyone across the country and, you know, maybe people in other countries who donated to the cause, because they're delighted for Niall and Aisling Donher that they've achieved their target to help Dan get his therapy and treatment. So it's great. They had a big fundraising campaign, and, you know, they announced it on Friday. So I say fair play to everyone and well done. And I take that opportunity to wish Dan and it on her family best of luck in the future.
For sure, John. And just like looking to the future a little bit, John Horan did say that potentially a shortened season might come into play, which would be, I'd say anyway, most people would think it'll be knockout football. Like, you've been kind of unlucky, really, that your career coincided with such a dominant Dublin team in Leinster. You know, you've reached finals, but it's been a tough one. Do you think that kind of a different season, something that is kind of unknown, would give the other counties an edge when it comes to kind of taking on the top ones that have been dominating?
Yes, sure. You know, I think looking at sport across the world, any kind of knockout competition just like that kind of springs surprises. So I would say, why not? You would imagine that gives everybody a bit of an opportunity. But, you know, what major difference would it be once there's no back door, I suppose? Because, you know, if you're knocked out of your provincial, you go into the back door, you're knocked out of that, that's two games, you're gone anyway. So for some teams in the country in the past number of seasons, there has been short seasons anyway. It'd be the duration between, or the gap between games would be what kind of drags it on. And trying to get hurling and football into one calendar is quite tricky. But yeah, it could, you know, if you look at, as I mentioned, you know, look across the water at FA Cup and all the cup competitions, they tend to throw up some surprises. So you would be hopeful, yeah. Essentially, Marie, if you're saying that I could get a Leinster championship or something when we go back to a knockout competition, I'd be all for it this season, no problem.
I was trying to be subtle, but sure, look, you went with it. John Heslin, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck with the farming and the football.
Thanks very much, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Sean. Best of luck. Game on 2FM. Welcome back to Game On. We were just talking to John Heslin there. Marie, there was one line in John Horan's statement that kind of worries me for your beloved GAA, and that is, when will health authorities deem contact sport safe? That's like, how long is a piece of string?
None of them are safe, ever.
Look at rugby, same thing.
Yeah, it's madness as soon as you step on, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, but I don't know. Contact sport.
I thought you were going to ask about herd testing Ruby, because I hadn't a clue what he was on about. How do you test a herd?
Same way as you test it. Don't worry about it, don't care. You just test every. You just test each individual animal. It just takes forever. Depends how big your herd is.
Yeah. I was fairly happy that Ruby took the farming questions there.
Yeah. That's true.
I noticed the silence and the look of the 2 year face.
Oh, the fear when it came to chatting about cattle. I was like, what are we going to talk about?
I probably asked him about beef, and for all I know, he could be fair farming dairy, but anyway.
Pulling its tail, trying to milk it.
I made a stab at it.
Now, lads, let's turn our attention to women's football. And there's been a lot happening today in particular. And I'm delighted to be joined by Republic of Ireland player Stephanie Roach to talk about all of the news. Stephanie, starting with Vera Pausch, she says she fully extends to sign a contract extension with the FAI. Some positive news, no doubt.
Yeah, obviously it's good to see a bit of good news today with everything that's going on, and kind of, I suppose, unknown. Like, no one really knows what's happening in terms of when we'll be playing again, but it's good to see that Vera is going to sign on for an extension.
How important is it to have that consistency and continuity now, kind of when everything else is up in the air and everyone is in limbo?
Yeah, it's very important. I think Vera's obviously been in touch with us as well. We have our WhatsApp groups, like most teams do, and she's kind of been in touch to make sure everybody's doing the right thing. So to see that she wants to extend her contract means that she's here for the long haul, and she wants to help the team to get to where we need to be, which is, from players' point of view, it's great to see.
Stephanie, we've seen her buy in, how excited she is when you win and get the results. But what about in the dressing room? What has she brought that's different?
She's quite calm. I think she doesn't really... I think we've had a bit of a difference between Colin, because he was a little bit more of a over-exaggerated thing from the sideline and kind of got caught up in the game as such, whereas Vera's quite calm. If things aren't going well, we come in at half-time and she'll just talk about what we've already worked on before coming up to the game as such. So she makes things a little bit more simple for us, and everybody knows what they have to do. And hopefully then when we go back out at half-time, we try and turn it around if things aren't going right and work on what she asked for. So she's quite calm and in her message and what she wants us to do. So she's a different kind of type of manager to what we would have been used to in the past.
Does she then identify leaders within the team who are expected to lead the way and control the conversation on the pitch?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think most managers kind of leave it to the girls. I think in terms of the Irish team, we've always had kind of good characters within the team. There's never been anyone who kind of doesn't pull their weight as such, but if they're not pulling their weight, again, people will make sure that they do, you know, that kind of way. So I think she leaves it to the players to kind of, she trusts us as such that if she gives us a message and she gives us something during the week in training to put out on the pitch, if we're not doing this, she'll kind of have a quiet word and let it be known that she knows you're not doing what you need to be done. But I think in terms of the players, we've got really good characters in the team, as I said, and the girls usually try to give their all every time we play.
Stephanie, in her comments today, she detailed the work that's ongoing in improving the development of home-based players, and I know that there has been a few sessions. What kind of stuff are you doing?
Since Vera's taken over, I don't think I've actually been to any of the home-based sessions because I was in Italy before that, but I do know that a lot of the girls were saying that they're really good sessions in terms of they're trying to do like 11v11, like match situations. So she's trying to get the girls who are playing the National League to be prepared that when they do come in, or if they are picked to play in the senior team, that they know exactly what's going to happen and it won't kind of come as a shock to them. So I think she's trying to teach them her kind of philosophy in terms of how she wants to play, and that's exactly what happens in the home base sessions. So as I said, when you go in or you do get picked for the senior team, that it's not kind of like a shock to the system in terms of what she's asking for from you, like.
As you said there, Stephanie, you were in Italy and you missed all those home-based sessions. You were with Florentia. Did you enjoy your time in Italy?
Yeah, I did, to be fair. I loved it. It was a different kind of, I suppose, scene. I'd come back from injury and kind of got myself back fit and got back playing then in Serie A. And obviously the language barrier and everything that comes with it was a total kind of just an experience in terms of even off the pitch, just kind of living in a different country. It's a life experience, you know, that kind of way. And I learned a lot of stuff and I really did enjoy my time while I was there. And I was dying to get back then and play here for the Women's National League, but then obviously that's been cancelled with everything that's going on, or kind of put back. We don't really know what's going to happen or when it's going to start. But yeah, I enjoyed my time in Italy, as I did everywhere I've been kind of over the years. I've tried to use everywhere I've been to kind of learn different things and as I said, to learn from it and try and help myself going forward as well.
You've come back to Piemont, but and obviously with ladies football, crowds could be small, things like that. Could you see a way back for ladies football along the same timeline as the men's game?
We've been given the timeline of the 28th of June. Now, whether that happens or not, I don't know. But I think as players, all you can do is kind of play to that timeline. So basically what we've been doing as players, kind of we're not professional setups, but we have the club giving us programmes and stuff to do. So we're kind of like in a pre-season at the minute, as such. It is 9 weeks before that starts. So we're kind of just trying to do the right type of training to get ourselves ready. And then if it does start and we're able to get back to team training 6 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it might be before the season starts, then it'll be great. But you kind of have to just keep doing the right things in terms of the timeline that they're giving you. It could change. We know that with what's going on at the minute. It's a difficult time for everybody and no one really knows when it's going to actually go back to normal. But as I said, I think it's just about as individuals being ready for when we do go back for team training, and hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
Stephanie, that, even about the home base sessions, just getting you home, getting everyone back to start playing, maybe get the league more competitive. Like, how important is that for Vera, that instead of looking around the world for all of ye, that you're back home here playing in a good league?
Yeah, I think it's important to the league to keep good players. I think I've said that over the years in terms of, I think if you were to talk to any of the girls in the league at the minute, they probably have got aspirations, particularly the younger girls, to go to better leagues and go to kind of professional setups where they can get kind of their full focus on football, because a lot of the girls now playing the Women's National League are working full time and then playing football part time. As such, like, obviously a lot of the girls put in a lot of work to make sure that they're up to scratch when they do play the matches at the weekend. But I do think a lot of the younger girls would have those aspirations, like I did when I was growing up, to go and play in a professional setup and get somewhere where it's going to be the top level, you know, that kind of way. So I think the focus needs to be that the Women's National League is definitely the main focus for the FAI, and that the players that are playing in it are a priority, you know, and the girls know in the league that if they're playing in the league, it's going to be a good setup. It's going to be to the best. They're going to kind of put as much into it as they possibly can. So then maybe if you do have aspirations to maybe to go to college in Dublin or in Galway or wherever it might be, that when you're playing football, you're playing at a good level and the standard is really good in the league. And then you obviously have an opportunity to be seen by Vera and Eileen, who come and watch the games and hopefully get into the Irish team. So, yeah, obviously it's important that the league is at a high standard, and I hope that it will continue to grow and continue to improve.
Stephanie, just from your own personal point of view, it must be such a strange time for you because football has been such a big part of your life and also your partner Dean Zambra's life as well. Like, how are you filling the time? What are you even talking about these days?
Yeah, just trying not to kill each other, I suppose, is a good start.
I should add, Dean is a professional footballer.
Yeah, to be fair, like, we're actually, it's been quite good having each other because, as I said, right now it's all about doing individual training, and we've been quite lucky in terms of we have each other. Like, we went out for a 5K yesterday and Dean was kind of the pace setter keeping me going, so it was good to kind of have somebody to kind of to keep up with as such. So I think, like, having each other is good because we both kind of have similar programs in terms of he has a program from Longford that maybe I can do things out of it, shake things up from the program I have from P-Mount and vice versa. So yeah, it's good to have that kind of partnership, to be able to go out and do the work together.
I imagine. Look, Stephanie, it's great to have you back anyway, and hopefully we'll get to see you back playing soon, because it was such a stop-start journey for you over the last few months with Italy and the lockdown and now this limbo. So best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
See you, Stephanie. Best of luck.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, there mightn't be much rugby going on the pitch, but off the pitch, there's a right battle in world rugby for leadership. And we're delighted to be joined by Gerry Thornley to hopefully help us work all this out. Gerry, how are you?
Not too bad, Duncan. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm keeping somewhat apart from Ruby and Marie here, but other than that, happy out. Gerry, you might take us through the, obviously, voting has started in World Rugby for leadership, and it's between Bill Beaumont and August Pichot, the Argentinian scrum half, both with kind of different views of maybe the calendar and how it should all fit in.
Yeah, Pichot certainly wants to shake up the global calendar in a major way. He'd like to bring in a World Nations League, which he proposed last year. I'm sure he'd bring that back to the table. He's representing Zanzibar, in effect, the Argentinian Rugby Union and the Australian Rugby Union, South Africa, New Zealand. They're all backing him because their need is more acute. They need a World Nations League. The Australians are in big trouble financially. The Argentinians have been a fairly part of state for years. So it's falling, sadly, along very particularly northern-southern hemisphere line, this battle, with Pichot liable. The leading rugby unions, the top 10, as it were, the Six Nations and the four southern hemisphere countries in the rugby championship, each get 3 votes apiece. So that's 30 of the 51 votes accounted for. And in effect, Beaumont is starting off with 18 to Pichot's 12, because the Six Nations are all going to vote en bloc behind him as well.
Gerry, if you had a vote, if you had the choice, which way would you go?
I'd go Pichot myself. But I can understand why there is this Six Nations bloc. They've always been strongly aligned, even at times in the, you know, venture had to do their own TV deals for the Six Nations. They tried to do with Sky at one stage. And the French are liable to go their own way. Everybody's liable to go their own way when push comes to shove. But they see it as unity and strength. Beaumont is a very popular figure within the English and European game. He's been around a long time. He's a very good lobbyist. He's, like I said, very well liked, very popular. Peter has had conflicts of interest in terms of his outside business interests and had him in conflict with you know what he does. He became a director of a company that, in effect, wanted to buy, invent a new competition and needed World Rugby approval. That was seen as a conflict of interest. It's a mining company, Argentina, Fortesco, South America, and, you know, whatever Peter is, he wouldn't imagine, he presumed he'd know an awful lot about mining. But he seemed to provoke people. He doesn't get on as well with people. But I think at this time in the game's history, rugby needs it needs visionary thinking, and it doesn't need a northern southern hemisphere divide. The Australian rugby union went to the wall, or the Argentinian rugby union went to the wall. It would do the game no good, and it just needs I think a World Nations League, a World Club Cup, needs new thinking. It needs a little, particularly now. There's a sense of opportunity here, and you could actually bring in a global calendar. But if it's not going to happen now, it might never happen.
Jerry, there's lots of speculation about the IRFU and what way they're going to go. There was speculation that they were going to have a dramatic U-turn, but the story seems to be that they're going to back Bill Beaumont. Why? What's been going on there?
I personally think that's just a rumour that's not true. I can't imagine that the three delegates weren't all going to vote. It's a three-vote block, as it were. Only one of the three will be contacted by PwC, who are organising the election. And I can't imagine that at any point the IRFU weren't going to vote for Pichot. There was also rumours the Welsh might jump ship and vote for Pichot. I can't imagine they would have either. They're always going to vote with Beaumont. Like I said, for reasons already outlined, that, you know, they're very strongly aligned as a group. They think unity is strength. I think there's also an element of them wanting to preserve the Six Nations. It is the one guaranteed golden cash cow every year. It's the reason that the Six Nations are in comparatively greater financial strength than their Southern Hemisphere counterparts, because Zanzibar made such a mess of the Super Rugby Championship in particular. Whereas the Six Nations is a guaranteed success story, full houses every year, guaranteed broadcasting deals. And the thing people have got to remember is it's an invitational tournament. You get in on the basis of where you're located in Europe and what broadcasting and financial and sponsor packages you can bring to the table. But that being said, I just think now, coming with the crisis that's developing the game, this is a time for just to look after one's brothers in the Southern Hemisphere as well. They need it. And I think they really should reach out a little bit more, even if they can keep their Six Nations. But if you could imagine now, if any kind of relegation and promotion from outside to bring the interest would generate in the game throughout the world, and it needs something radical, it needs something different, you'd think, at this moment in time.
Because we've always had that divide, Jerry, haven't we? Northern Hemisphere, always. Southern Hemisphere, yeah. Tier 1, Tier 2. But you mentioned, you know, Australia are in big, big trouble. And that whole, you know, that whole hemisphere of rugby could be in jeopardy.
Yeah, it really could be. Because you think, if the Australians and the Argentines are in deep financial peril, what might they do? They might just take any offer that comes along, CBV or whoever, whoever it is, just for something, because they just so desperately need the money. And there's no telling what they might take if something was dangling in front of them. I mean, I know the South Africans have been talking about jumping ship from the Southern Hemisphere, from the Rugby Championship, and joining the Six Nations. And Japan possibly would do as well, but that would just kill Southern Hemisphere rugby forevermore. I think if anything at the moment, it just needs a global calendar and a world much more aligned thinking from both Southern Hemisphere and Northern Hemisphere. It doesn't need this divide right now. And then, of course, you've got the problem with the English and French clubs thrown into that mix as well, who are always batting for themselves first and foremost and the demands they place on their leading players. And you've got also got issues of player welfare. The one good thing in all of this is that World Rugby looks to come to some kind of contingency plans in the event that rugby ever returns to the pitches, is that it has involved the World Players Union, the World Players Association, and it needs that. It needs their involvement, because heretofore, World Rugby and most of the federation's unions and the club game have just paid lip service to the idea of player welfare. At least they are now part of this debate, which they need to be.
Absolutely. Jerry, thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
Not at all. Done a good job to you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Cheers, Jerry.
We've had a few texts in, lads. You cannot play a football game with the 2 metre social distancing guidelines in place. There'll be no football or contact sport in the near future.
No one's gotten near to the Dubs for five years. They've been at social distance for too long.
And Aileen Barron says, a nice little summary of the reality of farming by John Heslin. Good luck with the herd tests.
I have to go back and listen to the podcast because I had no idea what was going on.
You should actually, Donica, just ask someone in the vicinity of Cork to bring you out someday. We're doing the herd test. And this is all over. Just stick your hand up and apply for it.
Yeah. John Hayes told me if I ever came on his land, he'd shoot me. So I'm going to stick to that.
OK, lads, that is all we have time for Monday. Monday, good Monday done.
Game on 2FM.